Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No. We're going to teabag fight. Yeah.
You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
What's going on? Wow, I just hit puberty. That was fun. That was good stuff. Always love a good intro. You know, you always love a real good, clean, professional introduction. What's up, everybody? This is JP. We're at The Session here, hanging out with Chad from Grey Wolf Brewing. Hope everything's going good on your guys' end out there in podcast world, listening to this show and enjoying beers and drinking about beers now that, you know, you're drinking about beers. Just said, and that's weird. You know, things are opening up a little bit more, and hopefully you guys are getting out there and supporting each other, supporting your local breweries, your craft breweries, and, you know, just sort of doing all the shopping that was really hard to do over the last year and change, whatever the months are. I don't even know anymore. You know, so hopefully like that. I was able to actually get out finally and take my kid, go to a park, and that was fun. It was a good time, and there were lots of people around, and I felt really uncomfortable. And then I was like, you know what? This is the catalyst I needed, because before people were like, oh, let's go to this bar and sit outside. I'm like, no, I'm afraid of the air. And, you know, but now being, it was Children's Fairyland in Oakland. If anybody's ever heard of that, it's like Disneyland if it had like a twin removed in birth, like at birth or something. And then the twin, you know, I don't know, watched cartoons 24/7. It's just like small, weird, very odd park. But cool and like sort of vibey and very Oakland. I liked it. Basically if you lived in the Bay Area, you sort of went here as a kid and it was cool to like take my kid there and hang out with some family there. And it was a good time. Everyone was wearing masks and it was, you know, it was fun. But, anyway, after that, I feel like I'm ready now to like go sit outside at a bar and get a beer and start supporting my my community. Anyway, hopefully you guys are doing the same.
You should probably get some sun, too. You look a little pale.
Well, it's the light, man. It's my makeup tutorial light. See, I'll turn it off. But it helps, right? Anyway, well, we're here with Chad from Grey Wolf Brewing. Chad, what's going on, dude? Welcome to the show.
It is Monday. Time for beer. Been working all day long.
Yeah, sure.
One little thing about Grey Wolf here is I truly am everything about the company, the business, the brewing, the whole shebang. I work about 6 days a week.
Just
insane amount of hours put in. You know, when you open 5 weeks before COVID shuts everything down, It's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do, man. Wow. 5 weeks before.
Yeah.
Jiminy Christmas. How was it? How were those 5 weeks leading up to it? Were they like everything you expected or?
Yeah, it was. We were touching upon projected numbers. I mean, it's kind of hard to really gauge what that's actually going to be. You're in a new place. You're running a business, something you've never done before. So you just, throw your hat in the ring, say, hey, let's go.
Yeah.
And then the rug gets absolutely yanked out from underneath you.
Jeez.
Here in California, as you know, were you open on March 16th, that final day, or was everything shut down?
Oh, the bar? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
It was actually literally 5 weeks that I'd been open, and this whole thing comes down. We have our final night. I wrap up, send the last customers out the door, close up everything, and just start, walking around, cleaning up, doing my normal evening chores afterwards, and just kind of look around and think, you have absolutely got to be shitting me.
Yeah. What do you do? Like, what do you think about? Are you thinking you're going to survive? I mean, because we didn't know. Nobody knew how long this was going to be.
Had a clue.
A lot of brewers were like, I thought maybe a couple of weeks at the most, but it turns out it wasn't that at all.
Yeah, no, it turned out closer to, 15 months now, is it, I think, kind of where we're at this moment. The nice thing for us is definitely planned flexibility into the business model. And I had actually purchased an October can seamer some months before at an auction. Turns out it was a really good purchase because I have absolutely milked every single cent out of that thing.
There you go.
I don't know, something like 27,000 cans in the past year individually. So
damn,
that saved our ass because we wouldn't have been able to make it without that at all. We shut down that Saturday, as I was alluding to. Sunday, the promise I made to my wife on this whole thing was that Sundays were for her and for the boys. I've got a 3 and a 4 year old.
Nice.
And, shut down that Saturday night, went home, tried as hard as I could not to think about potential catastrophe of the future.
Right.
Just try to clear my mind, came in Monday morning with the focus that got me to that point and said, okay, let's find a solution. Let's make this thing work. And we have a local supplier here that offers bright cans, empties. And I drove over 10 minutes later, had a pallet of cans, started filling, and was open the next day for to-go sales, and did that for the past year, pretty much.
So you're in California, you're in Norco, which is Southern California, like near Riverside, I think, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, okay. We're kind of at the crux. If anybody's familiar with the area at all, it's the Interstate 15 and the State Highway 91, which we all lovingly around here refer to as the 91.
Oh, of course, you got to.
Yeah,
that's the big thing, man.
It's the only way to get from Riverside into Orange County, and it just sucks.
Yeah.
Always.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's terrible. More Beer have a shop down in Riverside, and it was like driving down there and hanging around there for a little bit. You're like, this is awful. I know a few people out in Riverside. Like, this is just the worst. It's terrible.
Yep. And on that note, I got to give a shout out to Rob over there at More Beer.
Oh, there you go.
Dude is awesome.
Yeah.
He's taken care of me over the past, I don't know, probably 7 years or so, that from home brewing on into now. If in a pinch I need something here at the brewery, I call him up and he takes care of me.
Nice. That's cool. Good old Rob. Yeah. Big penny stock trader guy, or at least he was way back then.
Really?
Yeah. He would like do one of the penny stocks and shit like that. Just farting around. It was like, all right, cool. Hopefully you made a lot of money, man. So I bet he's a big crypto guy now. Yeah.
That's something I'm actually getting into here now is the whole crypto world.
Me too. Let me tell you, I just sold off my V chain and, I got into, I don't know if I should say, because it's one of those you want to keep close to the chest, Track.
Can't say I'm actually familiar with that one, but
it's like, for me, it's like, I mean, look, my friend Evan got me into it and he's like, okay, now I'm selling this. He's basically just my daddy. He's like, okay, I'm going to get out of VeChain. I'm going to move into this, and I think you should do that too. I'm like, he goes, but I'm not your advisor. I'm not your investment advisor. I'm like, you kind of are.
Right.
Because you told me about it, and drunkenly, I'm like, that sounds like a good idea. And then, you know, you make money on it. So I'm like, oh, look, I'll just do whatever you tell me to do, Evan. I don't really give a shit. But it's like coins on the blockchain rather than just crypto. And it's a whole thing. I don't know. Anyway.
Sure. Yep.
So you're in California, yep. But I didn't think we were allowed to, like, places were allowed to open. Did you just say, like, fuck it, I'm going to sell cans and no one can stop me? Are you one of those guys, Chad?
Well, not entirely.
Okay.
To some extent, there was a little bit. It was definitely a decision that was made that all of the factors combined, I really didn't qualify for any of the stimulus money for a small business. I had all of my startup costs in 2019. And many of the calculations for what you would get as a business were the delta from 2019 to 2020. Well, on paper, wow. I actually was profitable in 2020. So that's a positive delta, not a negative one. So basically they said, okay, no, sorry, nothing for you.
Wow. Cool, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Busted my ass. I've spent a year away from my family working 18-hour days and this is awesome.
Yeah, that feels good, sweet. Man. Yeah.
Oh, so next round, how about PPP? Oh, wait, I do everything here. I don't have employees, no payroll. Again, shafted. So,
I couldn't get PPP either because I'm like a general contractor, so okay, self-employed, but I need a business bank account.
Okay.
And I didn't have one because I had an LLC for all my podcasts, and I was like, well, I got rid of it because my tax guy was like, you don't need it. Then this comes, and it's like, well,
turns out you should have kept it.
Yeah, it turns out I should have kept it because then I would have gotten some relief. But, you know, I did all right. It's fine.
So
came out of it.
On the back end of all of this, I will say I actually did get a little bit of relief, what they're calling a sole proprietor compensation.
Oh, okay.
For individuals such as myself. I think there's probably, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 individuals such as myself that started businesses at the beginning of 2020 and are in the exact same situation where they work themselves to the bone and have actually gotten shafted. So
they need help. Yeah.
All things considered, it's right. Right. Yeah. And really I'd say the small business and just another little stat, because that's just one of the way my mind works on stats and things like that. 34% of all small businesses have closed since January of 2020. One third of all small businesses in the United States have closed
permanently.
That's frightening as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. But, we needed way more help than we got. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, through all of this, I don't know if you were down there in Long Beach in 2019 for the Craft Brewers Conference and down there.
No, I was not. I don't get to go to the CBC anymore, really.
So with this one, I sat in on back in 2019, I was just still in the planning phases, if you will, or well, not even planning, but getting open phases. And I sat in on a little panel with Tommy Arthur, Doug Constantiner, Chris Kramer, and one or two others, like
Dougie. Some
pretty healthy names on, you know, what you need to know and a Q&A sort of thing for opening small businesses. And I think it was Tommy Arthur that said, you know what, at the end of the day, no matter what happens, because it will suck, there will be those days, we have beer.
True.
And that has been a saving grace for me over the past year, because I either just cry into my beer or otherwise homebrew, I guess it would have been otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's sort of dual advice, right? Because it's your at the end of the day, you have beer to drink to like help you recover and help you figure it out and whatever, which is, you know, I don't know how healthy that is, but on the other side is you have beer. So people are going to come to you for the same exact reason. So there is sort of that what do they call the sin the vice industries, like tobacco and liquor and, you know, and beer, like those are the vices that never really go away you know, inflation or whatever, so or depression. So yeah, I mean, he's sort of right in both ways. Yeah, well, it's all the same. Inflation, depression, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, it's all the same. It's all the uns. Okay.
You know, and honestly, the blessing has been the community around here. A lot of people look at Norco or see the name Norco and they think, where the hell is that?
Me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're one of
I've lived in California my entire life. I have no idea where it was. I thought it was up north somewhere.
Norco is, they have trademarked the name Horsetown, USA. There are more horse trails in this town than there are actual roads or sidewalks.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a giant horse community, larger properties, and as it turns out, quite a little niche of craft beer lovers. There had been a brewery in this location before. They moved to Nashville, Tennessee, which just turned out beautifully because I'd been looking for a place in which to plant my seed and grow my business.
Yeah.
So, yeah, even my father had asked me, why Norco? Well, why exactly that place? Like, yeah. It seems so backwards. And the way I describe it to most people is this town is literally small town USA in the middle of metropolis Southern California.
Yeah, you don't think of Southern California as having one horse trail.
Well, actually, yeah, you know, with 40 million people, we probably max out just about all the statistics.
Yeah, right.
Every category.
Yeah.
So we found this place, got started as it was a brewery before. A lot of the trouble with getting things started, the troubles and the other brewery owners out there can relate, where when you're looking for a spot and you're talking to a landlord and the landlord looks at you and says, hey, I don't want a bar in my building. The other tenants aren't going to want your kind of customers. It's like, well, actually, you know, the craft beer customer is actually a bit more savvy, and those are actually the people that you probably want seeing your other tenants' businesses, and it will bring more business, and
yeah,
it brings the community together and all this stuff. So
yeah, it's not like you're putting in like a dive bar or some just like slummy sort of like where, hey, everyone, you know, let's just do dollar shots at 6 a.m. or, you know what I mean? It's not like a rowdy space.
Yeah, right.
Just, no. Ride the mechanical bull. That's not going to happen. Yep.
Yeah, I just saw what Roadhouse, I think, just had an anniversary here recently, and that's the sort of thing that I think a lot of landlords seem to think of.
Okay,
when it comes to this.
Fights and shit like that.
We're definitely not that, no.
So how do you convince them? How do you convince a space to move in, to let you move in?
Well, I have no idea. Okay. As I said, the previous tenant here in this spot was a brewery as well. I'll give a shout out. They were called Sons of Liberty. They're now actually rebranded as Bull Patriot out there in Nashville.
Oh, yeah, right.
So really good guys, super nice. They love their community and the community loved them. And that was part of my consideration. It's something that I'd written into my business plan I figured I'd have to convince the landlord that I was not a bar, that this was much more above board. I don't know if that's a good description or not.
No, I think that's fine, but it is sort of like shining a light on how, like, we think on this side of the fence that, well, you know, craft beer is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Like, everybody knows about it. You don't have to explain it to people, but apparently there are people who still don't really get it, and they just think it's a bar. Everything should be equal. Everything should be traded just fine. You're producing beer. You're probably going to have a bunch of rowdy dickheads, you know, and being that close to Riverside, it's not wrong. And no, I'm kidding. That's sort of shocking, honestly.
Indeed. And depending upon the space and how much you're invested in that locale, you may go to battle and try to win that fight, or you just move on. And I was not really in a state of mind to really go to battle over this thing. Cause, honestly, I'd been home brewing for 9 years at that point and had some award-winning beers and thought, you know, hey, this thing could work, but I had never brewed commercially before. I had never brewed anything larger than a 20-gallon batch.
And what are you doing? Like, that's the mentality. And, you know, obviously, I'm being a little more aggressive than I needed to be because I thought it was funny. But, like, what are you doing? Because it's, you know, you're not the first person. I think you're actually the second in this month that we've talked to with the same thing. We're like, I've been home brewing, and then I made the jump to craft beer with no in-between, no working at another brewery, no learning the ropes or whatever. What's your background what made you think that you could just jump in and do it? Why not seek out any sort of you know, foundationary, you know, knowledge in the beginning?
Well, for me, going back to literally my first year of college, I actually got into UC Davis on a football, I'm not going to say scholarship because they didn't actually assist me there, but that was in high school. I was that guy. I was a wrestler, was a football player and all that.
Nice.
And got in UC Davis. And one of the courses I took was Introduction to Winemaking Intro to Winemaking, I think was the name of the course. Apparently it's one of the more difficult courses for freshmen up there. And I excelled in the class. The biology, the chemistry, everything is absolutely phenomenal to me.
Oh, nice.
I made it through high school without doing a damn thing. I honestly think it was a joke. had I applied myself, it's interesting. It would have been really interesting to see what would have happened. But yeah. So get into college and, you know, away from home for the first time. And, oh, boy, let's go party.
Oh, especially Davis, dude. Get out of town with that.
Yeah, a little bit. Apparently, and little fun fact, I guess, you can be expelled from school for going out cow tipping.
Okay.
Something I picked up along the way. So anyway. Wow. So
that's a hell of an orientation.
Right? Yeah, screw it. I actually got my start into fermentation when I was 18.
Okay.
And fast forward a couple years. And just another little thing, a couple buddies, mine and I, would, instead of going out to all the fraternity parties, buddy had his brother's ID. We'd go across the street, get a couple bottles of wine, a baguette, and some cheese. And instead of raising hell and causing trouble, we would just sit back and you know, I kind of hate to use the term, it sounds cliche, but be intellectuals.
Oh yeah, be continental, smoke cigarettes, and talk about Faust and you know, German cinema from the 1920s. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. So you fast forward a couple years, and I actually had listened to a podcast, and I heard something about mead, and I thought, well, this is interesting. Let me see how this thing goes. So I started making mead, and I got really frustrated because, 6 months to a year before your product's ready to drink. I started looking for different ways to get my imbibing on, and found beer. The very first batch of beer I brewed was this kit from a place in Laguna Niguel. It's O'Shea's or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to those guys. It was an Old Castle brown ale. And Palmer's How to Brew book. And it was, I don't know, the third printing or something like that.
Oh, wow, you baby. Wow. Look how young you are with a third edition. Wow.
Yeah. Shout out to Palmer.
Yeah.
The guy knows his stuff. His latest one is absolutely phenomenal. The amount of information he had, the amount of work he put into it was absolutely stunning from that standpoint. But so I leafed through the book, and it was kind of like going through a textbook. It's just all this information that you have no grounding for. You don't have any tangible experience to apply it. Mm-hmm. So I'd read through it and just, yeah, okay. Grabbed this kit, and it had half a sheet of paper. It was 8x5.
Okay.
And it had all of the instructions on how to make a batch of beer. So I read this thing over probably 15 times. Like, did I miss anything? You know, I don't know. There's 40 words on the thing.
Yeah.
And I make this batch of beer, and it comes out. It's just oxidized. I drink the whole 5-gallon batch, but it was pretty disgusting. I sit down to open up Palmer's book again, and I start reading it. And the first thing he says in there is take the instructions and throw them away. So, word to the wise, throw away those instructions from the beer kit on your first run. And then after that, I just got hooked. And I don't know, man. Are you thirsty? I'm thirsty.
Oh, yeah, I'm drinking the blonde ale right now.
Oh, nice. All right.
Yeah.
I am actually, since my taps are back the way, I'm going to go get a beer.
There we go. Okay, perfect. Right in the middle of the show, Chad, really? Like you've never heard the show before? You're just going to go leave, so I'm going to talk, and we're not going to wait for the break. Now I'm watching Chad, and I'm just stuck watching Chad pour beer. Wow, how dare you? How dare you abandon me in my time of need?
I'm just keeping you on your toes.
Yeah, that's sure true. That well, look, tomorrow I have to sit here and listen to this and then edit this. Now I'm sitting here, all I'm doing is figuring out how to, what do I do? Anyway, Sandy Blondale, Sandy with an I, what's this beer about? Please tell me about it right now.
Sandy with an I is my mother-in-law.
Nice.
And she actually enjoys this beer quite a bit. And I initially, when I first released this beer here at the brewery, she says, well, why do you spell it with a Y? I spell my name with an I. I said, okay, done. She just kind of looked at me and says, that simple? I said, yep, that simple.
You're talking to the right guy. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. So it turns out I make these decisions.
Yeah.
The other thing about this beer is I use 80% two row on this beer. We're mm-hmm. going to geek out a little bit. And 20% Munich malt.
Okay.
And just enough hops to balance it out so that it's not not super sweet, not too much that it's bitter, nice and balanced. And it's definitely one of my top selling beers.
Oh, nice. Yep. Absolutely. Because you don't really find a blonde ale too much, you know, in that sort of like top ranking, because everybody wants, you know, I don't know, something different.
IPAs.
Yeah. Well, basically. Yeah. But I was thinking you know, like a more like a drinker, but blonde ales, you know, it's hard, man. Someone said once, I forget who it was on the show years and years ago, where it's like, if you call a name a color, it's not going to, nobody wants it. Like a red ale, a brown ale, a blonde ale. Nobody really wants a blonde ale, but if you call it a session pale ale or a pale ale at that point, whatever, you know, it'll do much better. So yeah. It's interesting to like find that this is, a, you know, one of your top sellers.
Yeah, I'd say top five. Yeah, it's a little bit darker.
Yeah, so you
Munich malt there.
So yeah. Just Munich and two row, and that's it.
Yep. And my thing is, before the brewery, I had never brewed a blonde. I had had several from other home brewers, and to me, it never impressed me. Most blondes, and yeah. I know we'll give a shout out to Firestone Walker. Their 805 is one of the
you
best
have to. It's
in the world. But it's not really malty. It's not really hoppy. It just is kind of a carrier of alcohol. I just never found motivation to brew one.
Yeah.
Here at Grey Wolf, though, it was kind of my calibration. As I mentioned, I'd never brewed commercially before. So after I installed all the equipment, which I, again, did all myself, had to, you know, did a water batch all the way through the whole process, make sure all the pumps work and I've got all the fittings and everything and tied in correctly.
Yeah.
Figured, okay, let's go live. And I brewed this blonde, wrote it on the spot and said, well, if it sucks, it's going to be the cheapest way for me to get into this and still have to dump it. Okay, fine. Yeah. Turned out pretty good. And again, it's been one of my top selling beers. So
I feel like beer, it's a lot like making bread. I make a lot of bread at home thanks to the pandemic, but even beforehand. But anyway, it's like, right. It's like, it's still, or like making pizzas, right? Where it's still going to be pizza dough. It's still going to be bread. It might not be the best bread you ever had. And I feel like it's the sort of the same way with homebrew or with beer, or I should say, because homebrew is a different animal. But like with a recipe that simple, unless there's a contamination issue, it's still going to be beer. And I don't, yeah. I couldn't see how, you know, your first batch is really going to suck. I mean, maybe your gravity will be off 2 points. You're trying to shoot for 5 and you get 7. You're like, okay, I can add water back or I can make it whatever. So I think there is sort of like a lot of margin for error. And I think that's a good recipe to start with too, because you can float it up or down if you needed to.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
And so I really like to eliminate all major variables. Always. That's just my mantra in general. You do as much research as you can before you get into the whole thing. And then you just lean on your experiences to make it work after that and just keep on chugging. And, as always is the case with homebrewers, it's been repeated over and over again. The three most important rules in homebrewing are sanitation and sanitation and sanitation.
Right.
So that's just the process that I utilize here and keep in mind all the time. And again, we just we keep working on each of the recipes. Each batch just seems to get a little bit better.
Okay, good.
And documentation is another one of my things. I'm really big on keeping track of what it is I do each batch.
Sure.
What temperature actually was hit, what pH was, you know, what did you get? That allows you to put together all the different batches and look at your notes and figure out, hey, this has happened the last time. Here's where we're going forward. Hey, yeah. You know what? Maybe we need to change this a little more gypsum this time or whatnot.
Okay. And those are the small tweaks you're making on this, but it's basically still 80-20, two row Munich.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And that just works out because it's one sack of Munich malt and 4 sacks of two roll. So it's real simple.
Yeah.
Five barrel batch. My efficiency is running somewhere around 72% to 75%. Not exceptional, but it's consistent. So
yeah, I mean, and that's one of the homebrew things too, where you're like, you know, you can either sit and tweak it out. I think Palmer said this. Maybe it was Jamil, where it's like, you know, you can sit and fuss over a 5%, you know, efficiency, or you can add a pound of grain, which is $1.10.
Yep.
And then there you go, yeah. And that's all you got to do. And you're like, oh, okay, whatever. It's at some point we're just, you know, we're wasting potential sugars. It's not that big of a deal.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, at the homebrew level, at the commercial level, that starts
it's a little bit different. And, sure.
Yeah, you need to make sure that's all accounted for and straightforward.
So how do you adjust your efficiency on the commercial level?
I still haven't quite figured that one out yet.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
I had planned on having twice as many brews last year as I ended up getting in with the pandemic and everything else. My sales literally were a little more than $100,000 below projections. Wow. So I there was just a lot of brewing I didn't do.
Yeah.
And somewhat to a detriment, I guess, I have 16 taps. And right now I have 4 lagers on. I've got a couple different ales. My two flagships really are my West Coast IPA and my Belgian style triple. Keeping up with all of these different beers that I've got, there's several customers, various customers that love each one of the beers. It makes it really difficult to remove a beer when you want to bring something new in because you're going to piss somebody off.
Sure. But you know,
yeah.
What are you going to do?
You mentioned blonde ales, brown ales, red ales.
Yeah.
The second brew I did on this system was a brown, and people enjoyed my brown. In my business plan, actually, the brown was going to be one of my flagship, one of my top 4 beers, one of the core 4s. And it turned out that everybody enjoyed it. They all thought it was good, but nobody bought it.
That's, you know, except, spoken like a true homebrewer. This is my business plan, to make a brown ale one of my core beers. No, it's not going to work. Good luck. Yep.
Definitely something else I've learned. I love ESBs. When I go out to places, if they've got a beer engine, I automatically ask for whatever they have on pouring on that beer engine. I want cask ale. Bring that to me. Nobody cares.
Nobody gives a shit.
Nope.
Let me take a break because I'm out of this beer. I'm going to go get another beer. I don't know what yet. What should I get next of the beers that you sent?
Let's go with the Schwartz beer.
Schwartz beer. Okay.
Next.
And then we'll get into a little bit of that and a little bit more about brewing and, you know, transferring from a home brewer to a craft brewer and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. Hang on, everybody. Gray Wolf Brewing on the session. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
Thanks for hanging around, everybody. We still got Chad with Gray Wolf Brewing in Norco, California. And I'm surprised your tagline isn't Norco, you'll get addicted. That's my Norco joke. We're doing a Schwartz beer, Schwartz Wolf. Tell me a little bit about your Schwartz beer here, man, while I open this up.
Yeah. Years ago, I went to this this German deli and had a brat, and I thought this was kind of interesting. I want to say it was Kostritzer, if that pronunciation is wrong. Yeah, sorry.
No one will know.
But it was actually on draft, and I'd only ever had it in a bottle. And it was absolutely, like, mind-blowing. Just kind of one of those moments.
Where did you go? But just out of curiosity.
It was a Old World down in Huntington Beach.
Oh, okay.
A place called Ratskeller, which apparently is no longer there.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
But I only know one like German deli slash craft beer spot in, in like in SoCal. I think it's, I want to say Hollingshead, but I don't know if that's.
Hollingshead. Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah, that place is tight, dude.
That place is absolutely bitching. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
Got a lot of friends that go there too. But anyway, so after that experience, it just stuck with me. And then once I got my brewing feet underneath me, if you will, as a home brewer, it might have been one of the first lagers I ever brewed as a home brewer. Just figured, you know, what the hell, let's give this a shot.
Yeah.
And I back then I started to really develop my focus on my thought process to writing recipes. And generally the way I start this all off is I do research into how the beer has been brewed before, specifically if it's a beer as old as many of these German styles and this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I figured, you know, what better place to start than those who have been brewing this beer for, call it, centuries, and didn't have all the technology we have now and were able to figure it out. So that was the place I started, and went from there. And then over the years, brewed it one or two more times. And I knew that was something I wanted to bring in here at Grey Wolf. And got to just use the Schwarz Wolf, which if nobody's familiar with the German translation, it just translates literally to Black Wolf.
Yeah.
And it's one of my personal favorites, and many of my regulars. This is actually the second batch here I've brewed here in the past year. So it's probably going to be a staple for me.
Okay. Yeah. And it's 5.7. Is that high for the style, or I don't
know? Yeah, it is.
Are you a high alcohol style guy?
Not always.
Okay.
I brew really good high alcohol beers, mm-hmm. as it turns out. But this one actually was...
Who would have known?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, alcohol makes up for a lot of things.
Yeah.
With this one specifically, on brew day, and even when I ordered the ingredients for it, I crossed up two recipes in my brain and didn't actually look and confirm the number of sacks of grain I needed.
Okay.
So for this specific beer, I ordered and included on brew day an additional sack of Vienna malt.
Ah, all right.
Which normally I don't use Vienna malt in this beer. It's normally Munich, Pilsner malt, and then a little bit of crystal malt.
Okay.
And a little bit of roasted barley, which I don't remember where I read about it as a home brewer. It might have been a Palmer thing, maybe a Jamil thing, where instead of adding the roasted malts to the mash, you add it at Vorlauf,
mm-hmm.
yep. towards the end, at when you're doing your fly sparge. So you don't get the same pH drop from all the roasted malts in there. So anyway, yeah, it's 5.7 because there's an additional sack of grain in there that is not planned for.
Well, so are you going to keep it that way? What do you think?
Man, a lot of people have really enjoyed it this way. It adds a little fuller of a mouthfeel.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. Normally, most Schwarz beers have a fairly dry, crisp sort of mouthfeel and finish. This one is a little bit more lasting and heavy on the palate. But I have many of my regulars and actually a lot of other people that the ubiquitous I don't like dark beers customers.
Oh,
that
sure.
Come in and it's like, all right, you know, will you humor me and just have a little sample of it? You throw it at them and they not figuratively. Throw it at them.
And they go, I love being assaulted at this new business. It's so much fun.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
They take a sip and you could just actually see their brain trying to do mental gymnastics, trying to figure out like, wait a minute, this is good.
I'm not supposed to like dark beers. Yeah.
I don't like dark beers. And of course, then that just opens the door, and it's, you know, all of us in craft beer know dark is a color, not a flavor.
Right.
And that of course elicits laughs and it just breaks the ice and everybody has a good time. And that's something I really try to do here at the brewery. Just
have fun.
Brotherhood. Yeah. Having fun and people just make it stick. So anyway, I love this beer. People have responded really well to it. And I'd have to look at the numbers. It's probably probably top eight, something along those lines.
Okay.
Middle of the pack, really.
I mean, that's not too bad considering, you know, it because you're right. A lot of people don't drink darker beers. It doesn't matter if it's a Schwartz beer or a porter or whatever. Like, they're just not really, you know, people are really shifting to these easy drinking, refreshing. Even if it's a pale ale or an IPA, it's like it's, but you know, because dark beers sort of just hang around a little bit, and that's, you know, what our big Galaxy
crisp
brain easy. Homebrew brains like is we like that malt flavor, we like to hang around, but 99% of
those of us in the craft brewing world, yes,
right.
The consumer
does not think
lactose,
that
lactose fruited,
yeah,
sour IPAs just they I don't. I never say never on anything. This is something else. I know it's a point of contention a little bit. I've got some friends that criticize me for certain things that I do. I have two seltzers on here at the brewery. But also, I'm a brewer. I look at it as a challenge because making seltzers taste good is actually
tough.
Somewhat challenging.
Yeah.
The other thing is I'm also owner of a business.
Right.
So, you know, you want to offer something to anybody and everybody that comes in. So back around. Lagers. I really hope lagers become the new thing, like the
Same.
Next fad.
Yeah.
I would absolutely love to see that. I'm well, maybe placing myself in a position to really be one of the top players in that if that comes about. But I think we need more lagers in our lives.
I agree. And, you know, it is coming around. Like the last few guests have all sent lagers for the most part, which is rare. You know, and so it's good to see that people are trying to you know, come back to the easy drinking beers, because it is sort of like the classic. I mean, hazy IPA, I think, is like an easy drinking beer for people who like those disgusting flavors. And for lagers, for the rest of us, for human beings with elevated palates, I feel like a nice lager, be it a Helles or a German Pils or whatever, you can still it's an easy drinking lighter beer that you can still enjoy, and there's no reason not to do it. So what's your lager process on this guy, on the Schwartz beer?
Yeah, so obviously we discussed the mashing process. Mm-hmm. Being that it is Pilsner malts, I utilize a 90-minute boil, whether that's actually required or not. There's been a bit of research here recently that says that that's not exactly necessary. I'm not really willing to take that chance, you know, for an extra half hour boil. It's no big deal.
Right.
I don't mind at all.
Yeah.
But I actually take a page from Tasty's quick lager method that he touted for a number of years there. Rest in peace, based Tasty.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. But yeah, I never. So, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. We'll talk about it. We'll talk
about
it.
All right. So, like I said, it's kind of a pseudo version of what he talked about.
Okay.
I generally pitch 52 degrees. So I start things off fairly cold. Well, that's not entirely true. I will pitch at about 60 degrees, but set the glycol on my tank to 52. So the yeast go in and it starts the lag phase at a warmer temperature, but as it comes up and goes through its aerobic anabolic or consumption, whatever you want to call it, the aerobic phase where it's consuming oxygen and making the sterols for cell wall and all that good stuff, the temperature starts coming down before you shock the yeast. And once yeast goes into that anaerobic phase, once you actually see physical fermentation happening and CO2 off-gassing, temperature changes have a far greater impact on the fermentation profile and the yeast activity. Whereas at that earlier stage, it's more kind of par for the course. You're pitching a little bit warmer, the yeast are a little bit more active, you get a stronger start to your fermentation and things get moving on. This is all anecdotal evidence. I don't have any data to prove that this is the case, well, other than just experience and seeing it happen.
Yeah, it happens to you, and that's all that matters. You know, you can read it in textbook, but if you don't replicate those results or get those results, it doesn't. Then it might as well be incorrect information.
Right, and then from there, at about 50% attenuation, I start ramping up the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at logger temperatures, 52 degrees Fahrenheit, and then I start to about every 24 hours increase temperature on the glycol controller by 2 degrees per day, plus or minus. And by the time it finishes, we're, 14 to 18 days probably to finish off fermentation. And at that point, I finish around 68 degrees or so, 65, somewhere around there. And I've already done my de-rest, so I don't have to worry about any of the diacetyl or any of that bad stuff because I'm already there.
Yeah.
And then at that point, something else I do at about 10 or 15% left in attenuation, I close off the blow off and more or less let it sponge or carbonate on its own. It does a couple things. One, I don't have to buy as much CO2.
Right.
And I'm just not off gassing a product that is actually usable. Thus far, it seems like it actually produces a better product. And this kind of throws back to, as I said, one of my flagships is my Belgian triple, which as a home brewer was bottle conditioned only. I didn't keg it at all. It just didn't turn out quite right.
So the
way that bottle conditioning works, and I don't know if it's actually true or not, but people talk about a finer bubble inside the beer. Might have to
I remember hearing that. Yeah, I remember hearing that too. I'm like, there's no way that, I mean, you can, I don't buy it that it's a finer bubble. I think that was back from like a Papazian thing.
It's
one of the things that carries over. I can't, because how do you measure that? You know,
I have no idea. You know, one thing that you can do though, is you can tell a story and people will go, oh, well, that's interesting. Okay. Well, for example, the story of IPA or the general assumed story that IPA was developed to send beer down to India from England, which Mitch Steele in his book and in his research said that, well, no, that's actually not the case because people were actually making pale hoppy beers in England for 100 years before they started shipping stuff down to India. So I like to bust myths on stuff like that and all that. So, lager method. I honestly, in my lagers, I don't use any type of fining, any biofine or gelatin or anything else. Just cold age it for a couple weeks, maybe 4 weeks or so, and then package and,
okay, so I mean, you're still talking what, a 6 week turnaround time,
roughly.
Yeah. Okay.
Roughly.
That's not anywhere, the all that information that Tasty picked up from just talking to brewers and stuff where they were trying these things. I never really had a good one. A quick lager, I think the way you're doing it is a little, you're rushing it in the right places because that first 24, 48 hours is important and you can get that yeast going, but you don't overdrive a lot of garbage. And I think it's, if you did it any higher of temperatures, I think you would get this. To me, this didn't taste like a quick lager, and 9 times out of 10 on this stupid show, I would pick them out. I'm like, no, it's not rounded enough. But I wonder if you're aging it for longer than these other dummies have done. So if you're throwing 4 weeks of age onto it, it's going to mellow out versus like, oh yeah, here's a Pilsner I did in 2 weeks. No, I don't want to drink that. And someone in the chat was like, oh, well, lagers mean less fermentation turnarounds. Yeah, it does. So charge a little more or don't do them. But I think I'm just going to keep interrupting you cause I don't care. But I think that this is a better representation of a quote unquote rushed lager method than I've had before. And I think you're experimenting in all the right places.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And honestly, your opinion, has value to it. As you have, 70,000 followers or something along those lines.
I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Me personally, no, but the Brewing Network, they're all Russian bots. I don't, you don't, you know, we don't actually have actually humans that follow us on social media.
I'll throw a little shout out for your other podcast. Yes, Ears Up, which I will say I've never actually listened to.
Oh, well, I don't know what to tell you. Man.
So is that not a backhanded comment? I know Justin talks about backhanded comments. Or
yeah, well, he projects a lot, so it's fine. Well,
right. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, so I will, because I love lagers, I will stick to making them. I will do it all, just continue to do so. I will say probably my number five selling beer is a Mexican style lager. I call it Norco Lager just because it's the beer that I envision becoming kind of the staple, where I would really like to grow production to the point where I can make it on a larger scale. Be able to make it much more viable and cost effective. I only brew that beer. Just to talk about my system here a little bit, five barrel brew house. I have 2 10-barrel tanks and 2 5 barrel tanks with a 5-barrel bright tank. In my business plan, I figured within probably the first 2 years or so, I was going to replace the 5-barrel bright with the 10-barrel bright. Just envisioning, tap room sales and growth and all that. Well, you fast forward a couple of weeks and COVID happens. It actually would have been a far better choice to go at least with a 10 barrel bright or 2 10 barrel brights. And then the 2 fives and the 2 tens to be able to maximize and make the lagers the way that I like to make them.
Yeah. Well, and again, I sort of go back to like your, obviously it's not an insult. I'm just trying to figure it out. Like your lack of commercial brewing experience, like what motivated you to just jump right in instead of, inventory. What the fuck am I talking about? Interning at a place or sitting in on a beer or something like that.
So on that note, so going back to 2016, I was a manufacturer's rep for a company that made equipment that the military and law enforcement bought. I was with that company for almost 10 years. And in 2016, I got laid off.
Okay.
So at that point, we were actually 3 months after our first son was born, my wife and I. Oh. And it was one of those I'm not going to say come to Jesus moments because that just would make you think that somebody else brought this to my attention. It's one of those where it's like, okay, this is could potentially be a midlife crisis. I just had my first child and had a decent job that just disappeared. So God bless my wife for putting up with me for all these years. We've been married now 4 years. We got married after our first son was born.
For those of you doing math at home. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. We've been together for 12 years. So I mean,
you didn't meet her down at the bar, down at the roadhouse or whatever.
Right. Right. Right.
I mean, maybe you did. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no, it was not that good. So we've got a 3 month old and I'm out of a job. She has a solid income that is pretty stable. She's a teacher. So and the other thing that I recommend to everybody is reduce your debt, get rid of debt. Mm-hmm. And I almost may just sound like Dave Ramsey, but whatever. Get rid of your debt. Just make it disappear. Figure out how to do that so you can live your life on your terms. And this is proof. So we did that. I get laid off. And then my wife says, all right, well, you've been talking about wanting to open a brewery. You've won a lot of awards for your beers. If you're ever going to do it, now's the time. So basically, she was the one kicking me in the ass to put it all together. And she was also the one that said, you need to convince me with your business plan if I'm going to go along with it. So, you fast forward. Couple years and it's almost go time. I had actively been looking for a place to land Grey Wolf for 12-13 months or something like that. It was getting a bit discouraging. I knew I wanted to start small And in this market here in Southern California in 2019, spaces in the 1,600 to 2,000 square foot range would show up on the market and disappear in a day or two.
Oh God!
Everybody was leasing. It just did not exist. So I had a real estate agent through a network, and this is something else. Build a network, talk to other people. It's not necessarily what you know; it's who you know. So. I may interject all these little bits of wisdom of Daniel here.
Yeah.
It's
like, let's go, Chad. Come on.
I may sound like an infomercial before this is all over.
Hey, man, look, if you start marketing a chop and slap or whatever, a slap chop and a ShamWow, then we're done.
Sorry, wrong one.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. It came down to I was sitting on the couch one night and scrolling through Facebook. I saw a post by the previous brewer at the location here, and he posted that they were closing their doors and moving east. I turned to my wife. I said, "Hey, honey, check it out. These guys are leaving." She says, "Oh, that's nice, honey. Have you called the real estate agent yet?" I went, "Yeah, quite an idea." Yeah. Called him up the next morning, and we set up an appointment. And well, yeah, fast forward 2 years, here we are. It's been absolutely unbelievable. This community here in Norco is for being a business and wanting to be part of the community. They absolutely embrace you. It is unbelievable. All things considered, throughout the past year and a half, I guess now really, for the community to rally around and support us. We are currently the only brewery here in the city, and there's a couple to the south of us along that 91 corridor that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I'll shout out Main Street, Skyland Storytellers, Evans Brewing is new out here, Wicks Brewing, Stone Church, Route 30, Thompson, wow. All those guys.
Literally never heard of a single one of them. And just to hear that they're all sort of, you know, the same area. I don't know, man. There's so many breweries out that would freak me. And so again, back to my question. This is the third time you've evaded me now. Why would you enter a business like this having no commercial experience, especially in a competitive market as craft beer?
Faith. It's not the only thing I can do give you an answer.
You sort of said it when you said you were having a midlife crisis, and I think you sort of touched on the reason why, and I just want to expand on that a little bit, because craft beer is very emotional, I think, at the end of the day. If you have a lot of passion. If you're in this business, you have passion for it. There's a very few people who are in it specifically to sell, and I know there's a lot of famous examples of people who have started businesses specifically to sell, and they did it, and that's fine. Or they marry AB reps, whatever. That's fine. I don't want to talk about whatever her name was. It's fine. But for the most part, people are very passionate and very into the scene. And I think that with you, it sounds like this was you getting fired for a gross negligence. No, I don't know. losing your job is sort of like, when I left More Beer, I was like, shit, I want to do something. I got to do something now. I don't care what it is. Let's experiment.
And what the hell happened?
Oh no, I was doing these shows way before. More Beer, I was there for like 15 years. I'm like, I got to do something else. I don't know what it is. You need those moments in life to sort of kick your own ass and be like, fuck it, I got to do it. Either I'm going to pass or fail, no matter what.
I knew that I wanted to become a business owner. I knew that it was a challenge that I would rise to. I just didn't know what the hell I would be passionate about. And I, somewhat listening to some of the naysayers in my family, why would you want to do that? And people in the community that say, oh, you know, why would you want to do that? You'll never make it. I just finally said, you know what? Screw all that. I love beer. I get into conversations with people about beer. I've done ridiculous amounts of research about this stuff. I know it top and bottom. I never went to school for any of the beer stuff. It was just all self-taught. The interwebs helped out, you know, immensely on that. So I said, you know what? and again, God bless my wife for yeah. somebody that had never had any business experience or had never brewed commercially before to take this plunge. And on that note, we're also self-funded. We did not take on any investors. We did not take on any assistance in that form. I did take on some business loans which kind of puckers you a little bit when you make personal guarantees for six digits.
Sure. And then the pandemic hits. Yeah, right.
It's scary as hell. Yeah.
Sure, dude.
And you're thinking, wow, did I just throw away the potential for my children to, go to college if they want to? Like, what the hell do you do? Are we going to be living on the street? Like, what the hell? No, things have been really, really good for us. And on that note, in 2021 here, we actually are matching our what I thought initially were some optimistic numbers on my business plan. Mm-hmm. We're actually matching those numbers thus far this year.
You know, I've heard a lot about that from other people, too, where it's this year has sort of been like their best few months so far because of everyone just sort of rushing back to normalcy or supporting the local economy or both. You know what I mean? It's like maybe people are overbuying and maybe there'll be a course correction, or maybe people will miss this so much that they are aware that these places can go away at any time.
I don't know how it is in other states, but certainly here in California, one of the things that as a beer manufacturer, the ABC created what they call a catering exemption. And the business owner could apply for expanded, quote, tasting room. What it does is it allows you to utilize your parking lot basically as your tasting room. So for the idea of safety and keeping people separate and all that during COVID, and in my case, it actually expanded my tasting room quite a bit, putting people outdoors. Thankfully, I am able to utilize that space to the level I am. The landlord, again, is a craft beer fan, so that helped a lot.
Nice.
And in the building I'm in, I think there's like 8 different units in this building. Basically, none of the other tenants are here on a Saturday. So I can utilize the entire parking lot and bring in a lot more people. Just a little tangent. I bring in food trucks and everything else and fill up the parking lot on Saturdays. And it's actually been really good for business. To address your question from earlier,
which one, motherfucker?
how exactly do I do this during COVID, and how do you stay open? And did I just say screw the man and all that? No, I mean not really. No, I am very cautious with the decisions I make as a business, simply because there was a lot of money that the wife and I invested into this, and the amount of time I spent away from my family in making this thing what it is today. So I wasn't going to say, screw it, though. This town is definitely on the conservative side, and many of them are not fond of the policies that are in place. Mm-hmm. But the last thing I want as business owners for anybody to get sick or get hurt or have serious complications due to a pandemic and a virus, which the virus is real.
Yeah.
I have some friends that are real not happy with that, but the virus is real.
I was gonna say, man, just you saying that, I feel like there's now an alert on your Facebook, your local Facebook page, where it's like, Chad thinks this is real.
Yeah, there's a very real possibility. No, the virus is real. Yeah. We can maybe debate the severity of it, and if you are susceptible to it, it is absolutely severe. It's no joke.
Sure.
People have died from this thing, and as a business owner, these are things you have to take into consideration. And then you get some customers that say, "Oh, screw that, screw the man. I hate the guy who said all this stuff." And it's like, look, you know what? I don't want anybody to get hurt. We are in this thing as a community. This is not like, let's all be smart. Let's take care of each other. This is the message I try to portray.
Yeah.
Literally, let's take care of each other. I would say the majority of people in this industry in beer truly feel this way. Let's take care of each other. Together, we are better as a whole. And humanity, absolutely. We, you know, this whole hatred of others and all, it's got to stop. So bringing all this back around, being flexible is exceptionally important when it comes to your business plan and your focus and business. Finding that happy medium between profitability, concern for others, and making, especially if you're in the craft world, whether it's, you know, craft bread, craft coffee, craft beer, wine, whatever, pour your love into it. Do what you love to do. Find it, do it, and make it profitable.
Are you going to cry, Chad?
Profits are not always evil. Profits at the exclusion of humanity is definitely evil.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No.
All right, finish your thought. Let's talk about this Miller advice.
I got on a tangent. The hell was I talking about?
I don't know. Being loved. Being loved by someone.
Yes, yes. Yeah. You love your neighbor. People. Be good to each other. Take care of yourself. Don't expect somebody else to do it. Help each other out.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it, man. Help each other out. Drink a beer. Have a good time.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, look, we can hate people all day long, but, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't get you anywhere. And, you know, that's why. Why stop going on Facebook? Because there's too much of it. There's too much of it. And it fucking amplifies it. And, you know, I love reading these articles about Facebook and Twitter and, like, the algorithms that sort of promote, and YouTube, that promote these anti-vax things or just a lot of stuff that, like, is counter to what people, you know, believe. And it just, all it does is it drives profits for these companies, but it drives a wedge, and it sort of is easy to manipulate some people in the communities who then go out and say, well, this is a fact because I saw it on this YouTube channel. And then someone fact checks the YouTube channel and then it's taken down. And it's like, well, they don't want you to hear this. And it's like, okay. And then it's just, right. It's more of that conspiratorial thing. And it's like, if we just weren't there in the beginning to begin with, if we just use Facebook to share pictures instead of news articles, we'd be a happier place in this world. All right. Bloodberry Berliner. Tell me about this extraordinarily sour, you know, change yes, cleaner or whatever. This is like, this will clean your pennies in a fucking second.
This beer here was, I used the sour VCA yeast on this one.
What's that? Who's that from?
Did I lose you? You froze up on me.
Nope. I'm here, baby. I will never freeze. I'm always unfrozen.
Am I talking to myself? No. You're still there?
Yeah. Your internet sucks.
Internet connections. Okay.
You good?
You won't lose me.
No.
You'll never give up on me.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I'll be here always. I'm hardwired, baby.
So it's a souring yeast, and I had never used it before.
Who makes it?
So I made a basic Lalamond.
Okay.
The yeast lab on that one.
Okay.
Made a basic Berliner. The beer is 3.5%. So I don't know. It was 3 sacks of Pilsner and a sack of wheat malt or something like that. And a bucket of rice hulls because they're cheap and stuck sparges suck.
Yeah.
And brew day went fine. Pitched the sour VCA. Came in the next day. Thought, yeah, you know, let's just check gravity. See how things are going. Check pH. And we'll... we'll see where things are at, because I planned on co-pitching just to help things along and maybe not dive the pH so terribly.
Okay.
So at 24 hours, so wort pre-pitching was, let's say 5.89, something like that. 5.89.
Okay. All right. That's about standard, I guess, right?
Yeah. Okay. Pretty standard for wort. 24 hours later is at 2.9.
Wow. Good gravy, dude.
Yeah. Vinegar is somewhere around that level, I think. And within just over 2 days. So it was somewhere around 60 hours, something like that. Fermentation stalled. pH had dropped so fast that the yeast itself, and this is a 5-barrel batch with a half kilo brick of yeast. For a, I don't know.
Is it supposed to drop Is it supposed to drop that fast? I feel, or are you supposed to co-pitch it, like you said, with an ale yeast to sort of like, you know, mitigate some of that? Because you're not making vinegar, for God's sakes.
What exactly you're supposed to do, I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
This is a pretty
why.
New product, so yeah. Nobody really knows what you're supposed to do.
Okay.
So anyway, most of the other brewers that I've spoken to have co-pitched because of this scenario. And I just said, screw it. Let's just jump in both feet and let's just do this thing.
Yeah. I feel a hole burning in my stomach right now.
It's very
acidic, but it tastes very good. Like the flavors are still there and it's still a very good flavor. It's a very good beer. I feel like you need to blend it with like a very light blonde or something like that.
This is the fruited version.
Jesus Christ.
I have this beer without fruit that is
undrinkable.
Going back to Daffy Duck or something like that, where he goes into the bar and they makes up that drink for him and it burns a hole through the bar. Mm-hmm. I think the other one is kind of like that. The other beer, a straight Berliner Weiss, yes, I do call it Riding the Metro. Few people actually get that reference.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I'm sorry.
You got to explain it now, dude.
Okay. Yeah. The band Berlin from the 80s. Yes, they wrote a song called Riding the Metro.
Okay, right. I know this. I figured it was related to the song, but I didn't know.
It was.
Like,
yeah. Yeah,
who knows the band? I figured it was Blondie. Who knows?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So this was my first foray into the souring. I knew I didn't want to go through the trouble of doing a kettle sour. Mm-hmm. Those that I've talked to have some issues, and there's not really a way for me to close off the condensate stack completely on my brew kettle to keep all air out.
Okay.
And especially in the town that I live in with a lot of livestock and a lot of dirt and dust and everything else, there was a very high chance of me making a lambic style beer, which was not what I was looking for. I didn't want any of the funk. I just wanted sour. So I went with this, the L'Allemand sour VCA yeast. And my God, did it sour fast. To fix the it did stall out on fermentation.
Okay.
It went from 1031 to 1020 and stalled out. And over the course of the next 4 days, I bubbled CO2 up through the cone on the bottom, trying to get drowse the yeast to get it to do something, did absolutely nothing. And my brother Ryan Wicks down the street here from Wicks Brewing said, hey, why don't you just throw a brick of Voss Kvike at this thing? It's a honey badger. It doesn't care. He was not lying. within 6 hours of throwing that brick in, it started fermentation and it finished at 10-11.
Oh, geez.
So
okay.
It finished off fermentation at, I think the final pH measurement on the finished beer was 2.83 or something like that. I mean, just phenomenally sour and deep on that front, but
yeah,
I can't drink much of the beer unless I got a full stomach. It's kind of burning a hole.
No, there's no way, dude. So how are people taking to this beer?
They fucking love it.
Yeah, there you go. Come on.
There's the people that either you like sours or you don't, and the people that don't like sours, like their friends will actually take a sip and like see their whole face start to turn inside out. It's like a black hole formed up and is starting to bearded them in.
Yeah, this is look, like I said, it tastes good. There's a lot of good flavors, but it's completely too sour. I mean, maybe if you start like putting some like syrups in it, you know, some flavored syrups to like sweeten it, but also I don't know. I think it's a good yeast. But what have we learned about next time? What have we learned?
Yeah. So here's part of the problem. And this is, again, I'm full of tangents, so I'm going to jump off on another one right now. I got a piece of advice before I opened this brewery when I was in the writing stage that if you name a beer something, you better stick to that recipe because people are going to fall in love with that beer. Mm-hmm. They're going to like it. And if you don't like it and you change the recipe, you're going to piss off your customers. So I don't know if I'll be able to recreate this beer the exact same way because of the circumstances. I know it happened. I documented it, but I don't know if I can recreate it.
I don't know that you should. I mean, no offense, right? But it is such a powerful beer. And I look, that advice, and that's the way I thought about beer also. I was saying just a couple months ago to someone, I was like, I was shocked to learn that craft brewers adjust their recipes for classic, for staple beers. It happens because ingredients change and whatever, right? But you can also slightly shift things. I think you can make this beer, have it come out a little bit more malty, but still with the same base flavors, and nobody's going to notice. Just a little less acidic, nobody would really notice. In fact, I think they would think it was an improvement, and you'd be fine.
You're probably correct on that one. When you're talking the level of acidity on this beer, that would definitely, softening that up a little bit, the pucker heads would say, wow, okay, it's not quite as sour as before, but they'll order 3 pints instead of just 2.
People order 2 pints of this?
I have had some people that will order 2 and 3 pints.
Right.
Yeah, they come up and say, give me another pint of that. And I kind of do the whole eye raise thing, like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, like, right. You must have iron in your stomach or something.
Yeah, I need to melt these handcuffs. I got to get out of here.
Hey, I do have some of those customers too.
For sure, man. They're everywhere. Let me take a quick break, Chad, and then we're going to break into, I think we have 3 beers, but I think we're only going to have time to do 2.
Okay.
So we'll talk about whatever beers we're drinking. Anyway, hang on, everybody. It's The Session, Grey Wolf Brewing. We'll be right back.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
Fermented.
It's The Session.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging around. It's Chad with Grey Wolf Brewing. And we're about to crack the Hop Wolf, which is a West Coast IPA. But before I do, before I curse you, number one, 7.5%. So I'm going to curse you.
Okay.
But I think we should address the elephant in the room. You are an ex-listener of the show. You're a Brewing Network guy.
Current listener.
Well,
like, you know, those who are in the Marine Corps, you're never ex. You're just retired. So, yeah, I guess I'm a retired listener because I work all the time and I don't.
No one does podcasts anymore. Yeah, if you don't commute, you're kind of like,
Yeah, exactly. I'm always here at the brewery. I get here early and I leave very late. So, yeah, anyway, hey, just a shout out. Somebody we haven't heard from in a long time, Riggs. He's down in San Diego right now doing some awesome things. Man, I miss that guy's voice. And and just because my wife said I had to mention it, Sugar Valley Brewer, wherever he is at, and she had a request here, the Dildo Mode song.
I don't know where it is. We've lost those songs. Jay might have them somewhere. I mean, we still play JP's an Asshole as our outro music.
Outro, right. Yeah.
Only because Justin's too busy, air quote busy, to find a new song. He's just running the bar. I mean, you know, people forget that, like, the Brewing Network and the bar are two very different entities. The bar pays him, the BN doesn't, so it's kind of like one of those where he's back to sort of full staff now because the bar is finally being able to be open for a bit.
As a business owner, I completely understand where he's coming from on
right.
one. Like,
yeah,
I will still criticize him for not being on the air because
I agree
can for... I'm a listener and
sure.
Yeah.
So
is that me backhandedly calling you an asshole?
I don't know. But yeah, it's, so anyway, Justin's fine. Someone in the chat was asking about it too. Everything's okay. I talked to him the other day.
Good. All right.
He's just trying to keep the bar going. So, I'm here trying to keep the Brewing Network going. we're sort of like parallel roads, but not talking to each other. Cause it's like, everything's fine. Whatever.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. And doing a fine job, I might add.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man. So there you go. We'll be in guy. And I looked on your website, which is graywolfbrewing.com.
Yes,
and there's a picture of you with a hop grenade shirt. So that's cool, man. It's neat to see.
Yep. Yeah, I know a lot of you hear a lot of the listeners call in and everybody else saying, yeah, you've had a lot of influence on me. And honestly, it is simply a fact. Definitely. That a lot of the information that I've picked up, specifically, hey, the quick lagering technique that Tasty was a spearhead for.
No, don't do it.
Yeah.
People stopped doing it.
Yeah. People stopped doing it?
No, stop. I'm telling them to stop doing it. Nobody do it anymore.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
I'm telling you, man, every time Warren and I, in between breaks, we would debate whether or not a lager was the quick method or not. And nine times out of 10, we were absolutely correct. There is a difference. But
but
we're super tasters. That's what I always say. I'm a super taster. So I'm like, I'm not your average chud walking in off the street, you know, wanting to eat jalapeno popcorn and have a lager. Like nobody, you know what I mean? It just.
People do that?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Sure, man.
So Hopwolf.
Hopwolf, let's go.
Yep. Left coast? West coast. It is loosely influenced by Kelsey McNair from North Park down in San Diego, his multiple award-winning homebrew beer called Hop Foo, which I believe he still makes down there at North Park. I say loosely, 2015 NHC down in San Diego, I sat in on his conference on that one, and a lot of the stuff he does, and I've had a couple beers now. I specifically don't remember exactly what it was, but he, you know, there were people that would walk up to the mic to ask him questions and say, conventional knowledge says you can't do X. And he says, okay, taste my beer. Or look at the 7 gold medals I have for this beer and tell me I can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's honestly, and we'll get to it here in a little bit. I was under similar scrutiny from some of the methods I used for the next beer we're going to try, which is my Belgian triple, the Warhammer. People have told me that I can't do what I do for that beer. And I just smile and hand them a glass of the beer and say, okay, here, I can't do this. Okay. So anyway, Hopwolf, I utilize, and Kelsey does a bunch of hop additions, or at least on his homebrew one he did. There was a first wart hop, a 60-minute. There was a 30-minute, a 15, a 0. I mean, kind of along the lines of like what Sam Calagione's doing at Dogfish Head with, I guess now it's Boston Beer, isn't it? The 60-minute, 90-minute, 120-minute, constantly adding hops to the beer. And I started to adjust my recipe to more of a friendly commercial variant, where instead of throwing multiple different additions in, you, which it could be argued does absolutely nothing and just wastes money, add the hops at a more applicable point in the brew, namely Whirlpool and dry hop.
Yeah.
In Scott Janisch's book from Sapwood Cellars, that guy did an immense amount of research as far as utilizing hops and everything else. You've probably never read it. I know you don't like hops. So
no, I've never read it, but they did an interview on Brew Strong with Scott, and I edited that show. So there's that.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm familiar with the man's name. Yeah, that's about it.
So yeah, on this beer, what I do is I use some of the old sea hops, Centennial and Columbus. I know Cascade's like the old original. It's what Ken Grossman uses in Pale Ale, and it's like the old workhorse. I just don't like Cascade. I don't like grapefruit. Sorry.
You know what? My thing with the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which of course I love. It's the consistent beer in my house, that and Coors Banquet. I'm not going to lie about it. I think that that's one of those beers where if they change the hops on people, you would just obliterate their entire like thing. That's a brewery that's built on that hop, and you can't ever change it. But I feel like it's sort of one of those like nostalgia hops. So I agree with you. It doesn't fit everything. I don't think it also fits the palates of everybody now, the more common core beer drinkers. But you can't with a beer like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Core beer drinkers. Yeah. What is a common core beer drinker?
Core beer drinkers. That are
core.
Common.
Okay. Common core. Okay. If Armageddon actually shows up and the apocalypse is here, we'll know that Sierra Nevada changed their hops on Pale Ale.
Basically.
That would be, what happens there. So, I used to, this is much of my brewing career is actually stemmed from Oops. And sure. Whether it's not as good of record keeping as far as inventory and that sort of thing goes. Mm-hmm. I was making this beer, and the first batch I did here at the brewery utilized Citra, Amarillo, Centennial, and Columbus hops in the dry hop. And the second time I brewed the beer, my spreadsheet said I had Citra hops on hand. Turns out I did not actually have Citra hops on hand. I either made a pilot batch or something and didn't record the usage, whatever it was. And it's time for dry hop, and I just don't have the hops on hand. So I thought, well, okay, screw it. We're just going to go with Columbus and Centennial, and we're going to double the dry hopping amount, and we'll see how it goes. The result was an astounding appreciation from all of my customers.
Oh, nice.
They absolutely loved it. Okay. It's super piney, a throwback to older West Coast IPAs.
Yeah, it almost tastes, it almost drinks like a double IPA.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost there at 7.5%.
Yeah, for sure.
Pretty close.
But it's a lot of that caramel coming through, and it's a lot of those older school hops. Do you put corn sugar in here?
Not this one. No, that's all malt.
Clear.
I must have kicked the keg or something in the back, because mine is not. I use crystal malt in this. It's for, I think, 445 pounds of grain, or 455 is the grain bill for a 5-barrel batch. 15 of those pounds is crystal 45. And I think it makes a better beer in this case, just the way it all works together. I know the big push for a lot of the new age West Coast stuff is maybe a little bit of dextrose or dextrin malt, Carafoam or whatever.
It's funny, man. Like, you know, listening to you, it's sort of reminding me of, you know, all the stories about, you know, pre-prohibition, where there was a brewery on every neighborhood corner or whatever. And it's almost like you get these regional tastes for beers. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that this beer would work in, like, out here or in another location or in Oakland or, you know, in like a more, you know, a more metropolitan sort of city, but not that it's wrong in any way, but that's not what the IPA is out there, or today, it's not what the IPA is in, you know, Portland or in Cincinnati or whatever. But in Norco, for you, this beer works. And it's sort of like a testament to open a fucking brewery. If you want to open a brewery, go somewhere and do it. Like, the location, it matters, but I wonder if it doesn't matter as much as we think it does. It's not a fucking restaurant. You know what I mean? So I think you can serve your local flavors, you can serve your local tastes, and still do really well, because not everything works for every community. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Okay. Know your customers if you're going to be opening a business. Absolutely. 100% know your customers. And there were a couple beers that I thought would be smashing. And, well, Brown Ale being one of those, and nobody cares. So,
yeah, which I would be like, hell yeah, let's drink some more of this, depending, you know, if it's not, you know, 6% or whatever. But
no, my brown was 4.7%.
I would have drinking it all day. So, I don't care.
I actually got some criticism, because when I first opened, I opened with 10 beers, and all of them were brewed on my pilot system. Mm-hmm. I had only gotten my main, the 5-barrel brew house, commissioned 1 week before I opened. So it took me, 2-3 months before I even had, what, four beers?
Oh, God.
Four or five beers on tap from that. But a little bit of a testament, I think, to the overall quality of the beers. Not one of them sold out really before the others. Just about all 10 of those beers pretty much sold at the same pace.
Okay. That's good. You know,
there are some places where you go where when they open and they have like four or five beers and then they end up with one and you say, oh, I see why this is the last one here, because.
Oh, yeah. That's
which is a point of contention for me.
Okay.
Damn it. Do you not, brewery owners, brewers, whatever, do you not taste the beers before you decide it's good to sell them?
Oh, yeah.
As a consumer myself, and you know what, every beer I make is not going to please everybody. I get that, but damn it, don't sell bad beer. Just don't do it. It helps nobody. If you don't know why it's bad beer, figure it out. Get to independent tasting panels, check the community, do something.
Yeah.
Life is too short for bad beer.
There's a lot of people that don't, that either can't taste it or don't think it matters. And that's what sort of frustrates me about that fast lager method, to be just, you know, I'm not trying to pick on you sure. personally, but just to think, because, you know, we've already established that you do something a little bit different, but it's like, yep. you know, if you are putting out beer that you think that you're cutting corners and you think the customer won't notice, that's when you're doing it wrong.
Absolutely.
And as a customer who does notice, I don't appreciate that, number one, because I'm way smarter than everybody else. We've established that. That's a fact.
Of course.
Let's move on. Let's not even talk about it again. I'm smart.
Yeah. Years and years and years. Of course,
yeah,
yes.
for sure. But it's one of those things where it's also then you're not bringing the education to the consumer about what a lager is. And I'm just going to pick on lagers. We can even talk about hazy IPA. Peter in the chat's like, is there a shift away from any IPAs or are they going to stick around? Unfortunately, they're going to stick around. But
yes,
I'm sort of glad that they're in their own category. But if you know, at one point when they weren't, it was like, oh, this is an IPA. Here's an IPA, and it's cloudy. It's like, this is not an IPA. If we want to have to be an IPA, let's make it a different category to not confuse people who are coming into the scene, going, hey, this isn't an IPA. Look how fucking clear it is. Like that's that kind of shit. Yeah. Where with the quick lagers, it's like you're doing quick lager. You're teaching people that these sharper corners are what lagers are all about. Then they go get a Wayfinder Helles or something. And it's like, what is this creamy, smooth lager? This isn't a lager. This isn't aggressive. And it frustrates me, you know, as an insane person that this is what I would be frustrated about.
Welcome to the asylum.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
I just opened up the Tartarus Warhammer.
Yes.
Let's talk about this. And this will be our last one, and then we'll wrap it up. All right.
Okay, so this literally was my first original recipe. After about 6 months of brewing and brewing out of kits and everything else and brewing with extract, this was really the step into the next realm. And as has been the case I've alluded to already, on brew day, I didn't have all of the grain that I had initially intended to utilize in the recipe. So as is generally the case with Belgian style triples, and I do say triple, I don't say triple. I say double, I don't say duvel. It's just not what I do. Traditionally the beer is brewed with a Belgian Pilsner malt, and they use a candy sugar and some other adjunct malts, wheat or whatever. And every place has their own thing. But it was a monastically brewed beer. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the Trappist breweries that just about all of them, I believe, have a version of this style of beer.
Oh, yeah.
So I was very intrigued by the history behind this beer, and that probably looking back was one of my biggest drivers to why it came to me that I wanted to brew this beer. I love history. And after I did my initial research, I thought, okay, let's go out and buy some commercial variants. And no,
good luck.
Without shitting on any of the monks that have been brewing this and the recipes that have been out there, it's going to sound that way that I'm shitting on them. So be it. None of them really impressed me all that much. Like some were better than others. Some were way too sweet. Some were way too spicy. Some used coriander. Some didn't, blah, 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 blah. Nothing really worked for me. So I said, all right, damn it. I'm going to set out to write a recipe that does work for me. And I wrote the recipe. And again, the happenstance on brew day was that I didn't have enough Pilsner malt. So I cut the Pilsner malt with two row and ran with it. I use a little bit of Munich malt and some malted wheat in this one as well.
What's your yeast on this?
It's White Labs WLP 530.
Kicking yeast, dude. That's a good one.
The absolute monster. And I've had people over the years, like we were saying earlier, you can't do that with this beer. I about half pitch on it.
Okay. All right.
And
why is that?
Say the flavor profile. Initially, it was just because I was cheap and only had one packet of White Labs, one little, this is back in the day when they still had the little tubes.
The vials,
Yeah. I only had one vial, so I just said, ah, screw it, and I just pitched it. And fermentation takes almost 4 weeks on this one. So it's not super fast, but starting gravity is 1081. So it's 20 Plato. It's
big,
pretty big
dude.
Beer.
Yeah.
And it finishes around 1008 at 2 Plato. So, I mean, it's 9.8%.
That's good. That does good. I think it was either Nava Parker or maybe it was even Chris White himself talking about on some of these, you can under pitch to drive those esters because it stresses the yeast out. And it has a great banana clovey, but not in like a, you know, Hefeweizen way. But that classic Belgian nose to it. And you can smell the alcohol too. Like you can tell this is a beefy beer just by smelling it.
And the other thing is, though, it's not real hot. There's not a lot of fusel alcohols in this one.
No, not at all.
Which gets a lot of people into trouble because they'll come in and as 9.8%, I do serve it in a 13-ounce glass.
Well, yeah. Sure. Well, you're a responsible business owner.
Right?
I feel like that's the crossroad between being a business owner and being a home brewer. Whereas a home brewer, you want to just fuck everybody up. But as a business owner, you want to make sure they get home okay.
Yeah, absolutely. This beer is taking care of me. In 2015 and in 2017, it made it through the first round of NHC and went on to the finals.
Nice.
I actually had a judge, and I don't know if they're listening or not. I don't know who it was exactly, but they said, if I were to find this beer on the shelf, I would buy it hands down every single time. That was in their notes on the beer.
And then if they rate on Untappd, they would give you like they'd probably give you a score of 24.
Yeah, something, right?
Yeah.
This beer regularly scores 42 to 45 in competitions.
That sounds like my oatmeal stout, where like it doesn't win second round, but it's consistently low 40s, and people say they enjoy it. It's like, well, then just give me a fucking medal, and I'll leave you alone.
This is the crossover between competition and commercial.
Yeah.
And I reiterate this all the time. You can brew beers to win medals, and that does not always translate into actually making money and being a successful business.
Correct.
The medals do not pay the rent.
No.
They help in marketing. And again, I'm not shitting on the BA or GABF or any like there's absolutely a place and trust me, if I got a gold medal, everybody would know about it. I'm not going to keep that secret. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that my everyday customers and brewing what they want to drink and what they continuously come in. This is advice for those who are interested in becoming brewery owners or brewers. Brew what your customers want.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I absolutely despise pumpkin beers.
I love them. I can't get enough of them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, not going to do it.
No. Actually, I don't think that they're great. I'm interested in them, and I'll buy them if I see them, but I don't miss them when they're gone. But I think they're an interesting style if they're done right. If you use pumpkin.
I will probably end up brewing one, and on a side note, I will probably end up getting a slushy machine and making sluts or slushies.
Bro, life isn't worth living if you're not a fucking hypocrite. Like, just do it. Fuck it.
Again, who really cares if you're paying the rent?
Nobody gives a shit.
That's not true. Yeah. That's not entirely true.
Well, you know, but within the context of this conversation, ferment whatever you want and sell it. Like, who cares?
Yeah. Just please make it taste good. If it doesn't taste good, don't sell it.
Yeah. Well, and that's
pretend it tastes good.
That's the hard line. That's the hard thing about taking a stance. Like when Monkish. You know, the classic no IPA thing, and then they suddenly started doing hazies when it paid the bills, and you're like, well, okay, fuck you, first of all, because I really, and then this is the problem with, this is why a lot of craft beer fans, and look, they're great guys, I'm not really disparaging them too much, but this is why people get pissed off when craft breweries sell, because you're marketing to evoke emotion out of your customer base. So if you say no IPAs, dipshits like me go, hell yeah, dude, you're doing something unique in the space, and I think that's cool, and I support you, not because I can get the beer up here or that I particularly was fascinated with it, but I think it's great that you're doing that. Suddenly you're not doing it. Well, that pisses me off, and I feel like an idiot because I bought into it. And so it's like, if you're going to pay the bills, then that's cool. Don't take a hard line on shit. But if you're going to take a hard line, it's hard to, I don't know, it's hard to cross, man. But as a business owner,
I hate to break your heart, but you're probably a minority, but that's okay.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I know. My therapist and I talk about that all the time.
I'm with you, man. I love a damn good lager. On that note, I plant not lager, but ESB was another one that we mentioned at the beginning of the show. I have a customer that comes in. Her name's Fran. Every single time she comes in, do you have my ESB yet? I'm like, well, if you get the rest of people in Southern California to start drinking ESBs, I'd be more than happy to. I've got a recipe that a buddy of mine, a home brewer, and I, his name's Leo, we collabed on and sent it in to the Pacific Brewers Cup. It took second place. It's a rye ESB. Absolutely awesome. I've already put together the recipe. I've scaled it up to full size. I just hesitate on brewing it here because it'll sit here for a year.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
No, Jamil will say that all the time. You know, he'll be like, yeah, I brew this ESB. Nobody drinks it. I brew it for me. And then when I'm bored with it, I throw it away. But he uses that. I mean, he brews it because he uses that yeast to then, you know, brew something else.
he's like
propping it up. But he's like, well, why not brew something that I could potentially sell, but also that I could drink? And I'm like, me too. Like, let me know when that shit's in because I will buy it.
Jamil, please. Yes, let us know. I might make a trip up to... where's he at?
Not Fairfield. Petaluma.
Is it?
Fairfield. No. It's farther south than Petaluma, but it's
okay.
From you, it's about 7 hours away.
7-8 hours.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, out and back.
All right. Well, look, I like the triple. I'm sort of rushing because we're running out of time. Speaking of rushing, I did decide to crack open your Russian Imperial Stout.
All right.
Which the weird thing is, it's a 7.5%. Russian Imperial Stout, which is what your IPA is, and is also less than your Belgian triple. So right. I don't know what's going on down there.
What the hell happened there?
Yeah.
I had an efficiency problem that day. That was early on in my brewing career here at Grey Wolf. And I had never stuffed 550 pounds worth of grain into my mash tun before. And I now know that rushing asparge and rushing Vorloff and all that stuff leads to you leave sugar behind. So
yep.
I want to say I was somewhere around 58% efficiency on that beer.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So I left a shit ton of beer behind, but I brought all the flavors across.
You can do a next time, maybe you do a small beer with it.
Make
it into a mile.
I have no space. Like this brewery, the unit I'm in is 1600 square feet.
I don't give a shit. Dig.
I know you
don't care. Dig a hole underground and fucking put a fermenter in there. I don't care.
Right.
Because like the flavors on here are really good. I think it would make a really good mild.
Mild?
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, you're doing a small beer. I mean, what do you know?
Yeah. I don't know shit. I don't know what you're talking about.
You listen to this show, of course.
Yeah. No, that beer is one of those. I believe the recipe is pretty solid. I just need to give it the proper ABV. When I wrote that recipe, it was actually at 9%. So that would have been more appropriate for a Russian Imperial.
I would like to try it when you do it right, when you don't screw up. Because what's your dark grain ratio? Do you know your grain bill offhand? Some people do, some people don't. It's fine. I would never.
Off the top of my head, I grew that beer a year ago.
Because there is a, and I'm only bringing this up because I noticed this with my beers, that like older beers with a lot of dark malt get like a Kalamata olive, like a Kalamata olive briny kind of thing to it. And in my experience, it's like too much. Like patent.
Okay.
So the acridity of like the patent can sort of mix with the other malt. And I don't know if it's in there, but it's like, it's sort of slightly there for me. And I would be interested at a higher volume with everything being equal, if that would go away or not. And it's also a year old. So, you know, I think that's that oxidized, you know, sort of like older aging out.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look. I know there was a full sack of rolled barley in there.
Mm-hmm.
So flaked barley in that. The plan was just to make it max out on mouthfeel and all of the residuals. I want to say it finished around 10-24. something like that was the, and honestly, I don't remember what the starting gravity was.
I mean, look,
was
it's dark
that.
As hell, dude.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's a good Russian Imperial Stout, man. And look, you know, I like I said, I would love to try it when it's, when you do it again, because I think you do sort of miss out on some of those flavors. The flavors are maxed out, like you said, but you know, there's something to be said about getting the alcohol up too, because that does lend a lot of, you know, sweetness and some, you know, some residual oomph. It adds, especially at a 9%. You know, if you're missing out on 2.5%, you know, like that.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
That would be 1.5% for those who are keeping track.
Yeah, but who cares about those people?
Screw them.
Fuck Look, it. I only talk to dipshits like myself, okay? So,
hey, you know, people ask me all the time, like, why are you talking to yourself? I have an affinity for, like, intelligent conversation, so you can just, like, leave.
Yeah. Peter in the chat says, is the flavor I'm talking about similar to the bell pepper flavor that Lee Shepherd would agree about Black Patent? Speaking of RIP, shouts out to Lee from Dr. Homebrew. You know what, Peter? I don't know. I remember that conversation we've had before relating the Kalamata olive to the bell pepper. I think it's different, but it might be. I don't know. I can get the Ouija board out. We can talk to Lee about it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry, man. Maybe that was a mean comment to say, but I didn't mean it as mean. I was trying to be funny, and that never works. All right.
Oh, JP is an asshole. So.
Yeah, well, I'm actually very nice. Chad, where can we learn more about your beers, man?
Graywolfbrewing.com, my website, and I'm active on Instagram and Facebook.
Hell yeah.
I include Twitter because I don't know why it's there.
You sort of have to. I don't know. I do appreciate that you have your website on the bottom, and you didn't do the leading three W's. And so to me, that means that you understand that you don't actually need those. And I appreciate that. just as like a pseudo marketing guy where it's like, what? Get the fucking W's out of here, man.
I think if I'm not mistaken, I think Gen X is ends at 78, 79, something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
I was born in 78. So, yeah, I'm 43 years old. I'm the old guy, but I'm the young Gen Xer,
the young brewer guy,
or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I'm the old crotchety bastard that actually kind of understands technology.
Yeah, same. That's why I pointed it out, because not many people know. You just get the W's and you're like,
it's not necessary.
No, it's really not.
And really
anyway,
nobody cares.
Yeah, Chad, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, good stuff.
Awesome. Do I have anything else? I wrote some notes here.
I hope not, because I gotta go. My life doesn't revolve on you.
Hey, anybody that wants to start a business, start a brewery, just do it. Make sure you're passionate about it. Also, learn spreadsheets.
There you go. Spreadsheets are your friend.
Like, if you don't know how, do it.
Because just learn.
Honestly, damn it. Anyway, whatever. Hey. I'm
Chad's drunk and we're gonna get
damn you, JP.
Go ahead, finish your final thought. Chad gets the final word, and then we're gonna end the show. Before we go to Chad, thank you everybody for listening. Support the Brewing Network, we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Support your local brewery. Get out there, wear a mask if you're not vaccinated. Fucking get vaccinated. Don't be stupid, don't be an idiot. Let's kill this thing once and for all. Chad, take it away. Last word.
Chad's vaxxed. Just saying.
Hell yeah.
Jazz you do that first person.
So anyway.
Just do that first person.
That was first person. Yeah. This is going much longer. Hey, everybody, check out graywolfbrewing.com. We absolutely love you. We love the community. Come on out. Share some community with us. Hey, if you're not local, share community with your neighbors. Love them. Don't be an a-hole. I'll just say it. Don't be an asshole. You know what? Life is too short for that. Have a beer. It's life. Just again, life is too short for being an asshole. So,
Grey Wolf beer. It's delicious.
If you're in Southern California, check us out. Grey Wolf Brewing. We're in Norco. JP's an asshole, and Bevo is an absolute angel. Thank you.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy, and winning. Just great beer, as great as his charity.